Accession number 6107, reel 2.
Mrs. Ackerman, reel 2. Now, you've touched on the schoolwork you did already, and you've mentioned some of the problems of paper, lack of paper and things like that. What else did you miss, do you think, from your schooling point of view as a result of having 3 critical years of it in Ash Camp?
Oh, a very great deal, because we had no textbooks. Our history, we had no history textbooks at all that I remember. It was simply dictated notes. Geography, there were no atlases, and so there again, dictated notes and sketch maps copied from a blackboard that the teacher had done himself. And literature was just 6 Shakespeare's plays, because there were enough copies of complete works of Shakespeare for us to study them. But nothing else, because there was nothing else. So certainly, my education certainly suffered. Maths was all right, because the teachers were good and were able to teach us without any textbooks. They managed that very well. But certainly, and anyway, only 2 hours a day, it's not a very great deal.
For all of the disadvantages, do you think there were any advantages that you enjoyed, which you wouldn't
have outside? Because you had so much time to think and to read. And I read a very great deal, because there were the library books, and that I certainly gained from. And we did have, they were very good teachers. And also, I think the lack of pressure, because you didn't really think anything mattered, made it possible to sort of enjoy things more.
Were any of the teachers particular characters or personalities, or
I think they
particularly
all
good
were.
Or particularly bad in any ways?
I think they were all very definitely characters.
Uh-huh. Which ones stand out in your mind, and for what reasons?
Oh, well, there was Corky, who always threw the chalk at people, and there was Bill Root, who was the headmaster. And he was the first person I'd ever had who was actually interested in what I had to say when I was writing a composition instead of my spelling. And they were none of them dull. They were all of them interesting and stimulating teachers.
Good. Food we've mentioned as well. Now, did the children and young people your age share exactly the same food as the adults, or were there any special arrangements made for you?
There was a special children's kitchen, which was they'd saved the best meat that they could find and tried to cook it in a better way for the children. I didn't get that after I was 14, but up till then, and it was also used for invalids. Invalids would get a special chit from the doctor to say that they were on children's meals. And then they would go and fetch the special stuff that was for the children. There was also special milk brought sent in for them. Not real milk, soybean milk. I think otherwise it was the same.
Did the children's health stand up pretty well?
Very well indeed. Very well indeed. The children all looked remarkably healthy.
Any particular problems arise?
I don't think so. Not with the children, no. They certainly seemed very healthy. And there were, of course, several babies born during the time we were there, and they all seemed to thrive. Yes. Some adults had severe troubles. But on the whole, the children did very well, I think.
Presumably some of the special arrangements made for food contributed to that.
Oh, yes, I think so.
Were there any other special efforts the adults made to the children on the health side?
Not that I remember.
Mm-hmm. Right. I imagine to your sister and yourself, clothes were a matter of some concern.
Oh, yes, yes.
How did you fare in this department?
Well, we brought in all that we could, of course. And my sister was very good with a needle. I remember she made me a a blouse out of an old sheet at one stage, and my mother had brought in some pretty material which she made into a skirt for me. But by and large, of course, you just had to wear the things that you'd brought in with you, or anything that someone else had grown out of and could pass on.
Yeah.
That was one of the problems, of course, for children who were growing all the time. But you never sort of worried about who something belonged to. I mean, anything that was in the camp was always sort of passed on to other people if it was any use to them.
And were you conscious in a normal kind of way of wanting to make yourself look attractive, perhaps,
oh, yes,
for boys on the
oh,
camp?
Oh, yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. And there again was a problem. Makeup, of course, was very difficult to come by. And my sister, I know, I gave her a lipstick one Christmas that my mother had brought in and hadn't used because you couldn't buy makeup. And she was definitely of an age to want it. I wanted it, but I couldn't buy it till after the war.
Were there any ways in which you could... what's the word I'm searching for?
Not really, though I do remember a camp song that they said that they were singing instead of Elizabeth Arden, I'm smearing MBK lard on, but that wasn't really being done, no. And the MBK was the store you could buy things at. I don't know what the letters stand for, but you were able to spend money at it if you had any money, people did buy, well, lard and things of that nature, food from it, but not lipstick. That was not possible.
I read in your short account of, what was it, hair cloths.
Oh, hair curlers.
Hair
curlers,
yes,
curl rags. I used material, little squares of material, which you fold cornerwise, and you take a little bit of hair and roll it up in that, and then you tie the ends together. And that curls your hair very nicely. And you sit with great... You sleep with great hard knobs all round.
Looking reminiscent of a gollywog,
yes,
I imagine.
Oh, yes, yeah. Indeed. Yes, yes.
Thinking about all of the customary, routine, fundamental things of life, of those things that you had got used to and enjoyed or even taken for granted before you were interned, which things did you miss most in internment? Which were the greatest hardship, the greatest loss? Or did you sense none?
Oh, yes, indeed. I think probably all the comforts that one was used to, I think certainly those... being so cold in winter and the lack of soap was another thing. And, there were a great many things you'd miss.
Yes, I can imagine the lack of soap being a real irritant.
Oh, it was horrible, yes. Yeah. And, of course, no toothpaste, no toilet paper.
Were there substitutes for toothpaste?
Salt, but not, you know, it's a bit scratchy. And... soap, if you had any soap, but that was all. Mm. We did have salt most of the time. I remember one man who always put salt on his bread because he said he thought it was falling a bit too low not to put anything on his bread. So he'd sprinkle salt on it. Mm. And we did have salt all the time. But not really. I mean, you just had to do the best you could without anything.
Now, children are notoriously naughty and have to have rules and regulations imposed upon them. Did the Japanese impose any such rules and regulations?
Not specifically for the children. The regulations were for everyone.
Were there any imposed by the, you know, the internees themselves
on children's,
the children?
Not that I remember.
Mm-hmm. So there were no constraints that you were conscious of?
No extra constraints because of because I was a child, no.
Did children ever go in for Japanese baiting?
No.
You must have been remarkably nice children.
Oh, we weren't. We were too afraid.
Ah.
Yes. And you didn't. It was not wise to do any baiting. The parents were afraid the children might, of course. Yes. But no, they didn't.
So it never arose in your memory?
I don't remember anyone doing it.
Okay. You mentioned dances earlier as something that was organised on a fairly regular basis. How was it possible to organise a dance? Where? With what? What did you use for music? What did you use for a dance hall?
Well, we used the one and only hall that was served as schoolroom, dining room, and everything else. We used that. There was a piano, which was played. There was a gramophone and a few records. And anyone who'd got a musical instrument also helped. Somebody had a violin, someone else had a piano accordion. Anything that we could get in the way of music turned up at the dance. And then we used the floor, and we had them fairly regularly.
Now, the dances were organised for the camp, for the internees as a whole?
Yes. They used to try to insist that men wore shirts.
With success? Summer,
yeah,
with
more success, or less, yes.
Right. Were the dances exciting occasions for you?
Oh, I enjoyed them. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, and I definitely looked forward to them. I learnt to dance in camp. My sister's boyfriend taught me to dance, and I was very grateful.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any boyfriends yourself?
No. Many of my friends did, but I didn't. My sister did, of course.
Yes. Right. Family life. Was it possible to maintain any conventional sort of family life within the few square feet that you called your own, to have those occasions which would be personal, private, family occasions?
Yes, I think so. I mean, it was, after all, your own room. It was your own home. Mm. And yes, I think so. Within your own room, that was your territory, and it may be small, but it was like your own house.
Good. Let's try that then. Who was the most memorable character to you as a 13-year-old child, young woman?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I remember so many of them. So many and all different.
Some must have made a more direct impact on your life than others. What about those?
Well, little things I remember about people. Not people of great people or anything like that, but just little things that I remember about different people. Mm-hmm. There was the woman whose cat died, and she was really in camp because of the cat. She would have left and gone home to England if it hadn't been for the cat, but the cat was old and she didn't want to leave without it. And when it died, she decided she wanted it stuffed. And so the cat skin was pegged out on the washing line, and I used to have to duck under this drying out cat skin when I went through anywhere out of my room. There it was. And it was there for a long while and was eventually stuffed for her by somebody in the camp. And her daughter was really quite upset by it. She said, if I died, would you stuff me?
Lovely
and then,
story.
Then I remember Sammy Wick, who was very small. And one of his absolutely priceless remarks was, "The English, we are a wonderful people." And I can still remember him now. His job was to candle the eggs and to make sure that we didn't get given bad ones when they should be all right. And he lived in a hut that I could see from my window. And one man in the camp definitely thought he'd been cheating on the eggs. And Sammy Wick wore glasses. And he came along and he was really angry with Sammy Wick, but before giving him the smack across the face that I watched all this from my window, he carefully removed his glasses, because glasses were much too precious to be broken in camp. You couldn't get any replacements of those. And then gave him two great smacks across the face, because he was quite sure he'd been cheating him on the eggs and pretending that things were bad and saving them for himself when they really weren't all right for use. So I remember those. There are lots of other people there.
How do you remember people? Some with affection, some with dislike?
Most with affection, a very few with dislike.
What prompted the dislike when it occurred?
Oh, one man who was really very nasty to his son, beat him quite abominably. I remember disliking. And others, oh yes, and others.
Do you remember the Japanese as individual people?
One of the guards I remember, the one we nicknamed Handy Andy, who insisted on hands straight to sides and thumbs right down by the sides. I remember him. I can't see the faces of any of the others. I must have rather liked him, I think. But no, I don't really remember them.
And what about auspicious people like the camp commandant? And
well, the camp... Oh, you mean the Japanese commandant? Yeah, I don't really remember him at all. I think I had very little to do with him. No, I don't really remember him.
And the camp master? The
Our own representative was the father of one of my friends, so I remember him quite well. But not anything that he said or did.
What were the first kinds of events that gave you any sense that liberation might be in sight?
Obviously we knew first of all that the war in Europe was over, which made us feel that things should be happening near us soon. Then we had a few air raids, just one or two. The food in the camp was getting steadily worse, but we were afraid always that we might be moved out of Shanghai. There were rumours that we were going to be moved by train up north, away from the city. We always had to keep iron rations, a bit of cheese from the parcels, because it was always a possibility that they would move us away.
Why was that? Why did you feel that a possibility?
I don't know, but certainly it must have been mentioned, or we wouldn't have been told that we must keep the iron rations, which were intended for a journey. I have a vague feeling that some people were moved away. I think that's where the rumour started from. I don't know who, but I think some people were moved.
Okay.
Because certainly we were afraid we might be moved away. We felt we were safer in the city than we would be anywhere else. But we had no idea the war was anywhere near its end until we heard about the atom bomb, and even then we didn't, because we thought that was just an extra heavy air raid.
How did you hear about that?
That was in the papers. We had the Japanese papers. As far as I know, only written in Chinese, I think, and a translation, I think, typed up for us by somebody so that we could read in English. But certainly we heard about the first atom bomb, because I do remember the lecture that night, which proved that the atom couldn't be split.
Could not
be split, yes. A scientist in the camp gave us a lecture saying that it was impossible to split the atom. And so we assumed it was just an extra, extra heavy air raid. And then the first real indication that it was over were people outside shouting to us through the fence. And we didn't really believe it at first, except that they were so obviously unafraid of the Japanese, so it must be true. And then, of course, we got every kind of rumour going through the camp.
Such as?
Oh, well, the biggest one was that the commandant was going to commit harakiri on the lawn in front of the White House. And I may say, we're all going to go and watch. Oh, yes. However, he didn't. And then we were all called to the main hut. And he told us that Japan had surrendered and that I think he said he was going to try and keep order in the city because, of course, that was the real problem. The Americans had not yet come. And and it was a big city and without any kind of order in it, a bit frightening. And that's what he was going to be trying to do, and our representative was in charge of the camp.
Does that mean the Japanese then withdrew from the camp?
Yes, the Japanese moved out of the camp then. After the surrender, the Japanese forces in the camp moved out. The guards and the commandant moved. Where he went to, I don't know, but obviously his job was over. He had another job to do.
And all the guards moved with
him? Yes, they went with him. And our representative was then in charge, and we had our own sort of committee that ruled the camp with the representative, so we had our own organisation to take over and deal with what needed to be dealt with then.
And how did the internees react to suddenly having no Japanese guards or controls?
Well, we, I think, were absolutely stunned by it all, really. They're the longest days. I ever remember those first days. We didn't really know what to do quite. And, of course, we were very, very excited. And that was when we opened up the gates. But we soon shut them up because people came in to have a look at the camp. And after that, we shut them up again. And only let in people who could actually mention the name of someone in the camp that they really wanted to visit.
Why was that a problem? What was happening exactly?
Well, the city of Shanghai was really without any kind of law and order, although the Japanese were trying, they weren't listened to anymore. And during that period, a considerable amount of looting went on. I cannot tell you exactly how many days it was between the surrender and the arrival of the Americans. It was the Americans who got there first. But I can't tell you how many days it was. During that time, we were bombed with parcels. That I remember very well, the great floods of parachutes, brightly coloured parachutes coming out of the plane. We'd put a white POW on the roof and the planes passed over. And out came the parachutes with great drums of pineapple juice and things like that and clothing. Great big crate of chocolate, I remember, coming down. That missed the camp and went outside. And I went out to try and get some, but I was too late. It was all trampled under the mud
by the time I got there. Like a child's idea of nirvana, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes,
chocolates from heaven.
From heaven, yes. Oh, yes, yes. Yes,
who were these? What sort of people were so curious as to come and peer at you through the fence?
Oh, just ordinary people. I mean, Chinese, Russians, anyone. Mm. Anyone was interested in seeing how the Europeans were doing in their camp.
Ah, yes. How was the master race?
Oh,
coping?
Yes. Oh, mm. Yes. Lovely thing to come and have a look at. Mm.
I'm surprised there wasn't an immediate reaction to rush back to your homes.
No, we didn't rush back, but we did go back once to visit our flat. We were very lucky because the Japanese who was living in our flat didn't move out, and he was still there, and as a result, our flat wasn't looted at all. He was still there when we went, and all our furniture was still in the flat. And he was very polite, and he asked my mother if he could go on living there with her, which, as it was only a two-bedroom flat, was rather... Anyway, she said no, but she didn't move back into the flat herself until after my sister and I had gone back to England. Uh-huh. We went back on a hospital ship, and she stayed in China.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't get back to your flat. Did you get into Shanghai on any expeditions with your friends?
Yes. We got a little bit of money given to us. I couldn't tell you now how much. Anyway, it was in Chinese dollars. Some rich Chinese giving us each a little present. And with that little bit of money, I went out with two friends, and we just walked straight out of the camp down the road, because we were in the city anyway. We found a nice little cafe and we got ourselves ice cream sodas and we sat outside. And, oh, it was frightening. It was so noisy. There were trams then in Shanghai and bicycles and people. And that was when I bought myself some lipstick and some rouge. Yes, I remember now. But I was quite glad to get back. I found it very frightening. That time after the war was very strange. Everywhere there were great banners across the street saying, "Long live of the Allied Nations." They all talked about the Allied Nations. And everywhere we went from the camp, we stayed living there. Everywhere we went, we were picked up in great trucks. And travelling by truck is another memory I have. We went to dances too. After the Americans had come, you know, they gave dances mm-hmm. for the troops, and we went along to join in and provide a bit of female company. I also remember the Belfast arriving, and I went on board the Belfast. I was shown round. I've got a photograph of myself on a pom-pom gun with someone from the Belfast. But it was a very, very strange time. We were getting ready to go to England. We had some clothes made, and we got the trunks back that we'd kept left in store. But we stayed in the camp, I think, because that's where we were fed. The Americans provided army K rations, and we ate those. And I think that's really why we were staying there, because the city was in quite a mess, as you can imagine. Mm.
Mm. Yes, looking back on those years, what do you think you particularly missed by having those 3 years of your life sort of wrenched away from you?
A normal growing up, because it wasn't really a very normal one. That mostly. And of course, I did miss a lot of education. I did an enormous amount.
Do you think you gained anything?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, a very great deal. Learned an awful lot about people. And learned, of course, how little you really need, all the luxury that you're surrounded by, how very well you can survive without it. That more than anything else.
Mm. A change of perception as far as materialism was concerned.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Probably something we could all do with.